It's all there. It's all there in the story. Every narrative that we come with tonight, every narrative that is a part of our consciousness because we have been impressed somehow by a news story or a picture or an image from this past week or this past month or this past year that is very present in our mind and in our imaginations now. It is all there in the story. No one and nothing is left out. We hear the words and we deal with the story each year again and again. And sometimes because it becomes so, we become so acclimated to it, we miss some of the references that at this time and juncture in our life and history, in the confluence of our political reality and economic mess, there might be a word to hear afresh. The governor, Caesar, political power and political figures feature prominently. Shepherds, the outcasts of that society whose witness in court was not abided by the legal system of the day, shivering, tending the flocks as they do all the time. Insignificant backwater place called Bethlehem. Of no particular interest except that it somehow fulfills a prophecy of the Hebrew scriptures. The place, the village called the city of David. It was really very small. Another part of our text in scripture around the Christmas story from John's Gospel tells us that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That's the translation we usually hear, but there's a very significant and important reference within the Greek that helps us appreciate, I think, the posture of this whole story towards our world. The Word became flesh, and more accurately, we would say, and pitched a tent among us. Now, for those of you who camp, that may not seem like anything in particularly extraordinary. You're used to putting up tents. But this is meant to be the symbol and the permanent abode of this one who has come to be with us. No permanent dwelling, no fortifications and electric alarm systems, a vulnerable, precarious tent. Always remaining vulnerable, always ready to move where we go, where the situation demands, because of this world that God so loves. So it's all there. There's nothing that you, as those who are working or those who are unemployed, those who are retired or those who are on vacation, the young, the not so young, there's nothing about your life or mine that has not been gathered up into the wondrous mystery of this story and of this Christ. And so we have to ask then, if we say that, if we have the audacity to say that, is Christmas present in Afghanistan this night? Is Christmas present in Baghdad? Is Christmas present in Zimbabwe among the cholera victims and impoverished persons? Is the night silent and still for the person living with AIDS, struggling with cancer, the teenager distraught by rejection from friends? Has Christmas come to those struggling with depression, despairing about the bleak economic forecasts, worried about investments? Is Christmas here for them and for us? Is the question. We need to be honest if we claim that every narrative, every story is gathered up here. We have to ask ourselves why the angelic chorus announced to the shepherds that this was good news they were here to proclaim. What was good about it? especially in the backdrop of a political system that seems to order their lives. It is the whim of this Caesar Augustus who says, I've decided the whole Roman world, those who come under the influence of the Roman Empire, must be taxed. You know why? Because they wanted to garner more money. Tax the people heavily. We need a census. We need to find out ways that we can get more money out of this populace. What can be good news in the midst of a system and an empire that decided almost every aspect of your life, that absolutely crushed you underfoot? For this to mean anything at all, for this to truly be good news, it has to address that political reality, that economic reality, even as it does ours. And yet the gospel writers and those who have lived by this story for millennia claim audaciously that this is true, that this is good news. The good news is that we no longer have to live under the empire's demands, by the empire's narrative. We no longer have to order our lives and our priorities and our values by that which we are fed day after day, moment after moment, through every media, electronic and otherwise, that tells us we are nothing more than consumers, bent to consume more and more in order that our lives may be fulfilled and that we would catch a slice of peace of mind. The good news, if it is good news, must be that the poor don't have to be poor anymore. That those in the rat race don't have to keep running. That the sick are not abandoned and the suffering will not last forever. Is it good news? Today, I heard on the radio and was very moved. Some of you may have heard on CBC the interview with Dr. Stephen Huang. He's one of the premier research molecular biologists in Canada and the world, some of his colleagues say. He's attached to St. Michael's, a center for research studies there, and he has devoted his life to doing research and clinical work with the homeless population. I was very moved to hear this articulate and impassioned doctor of Asian descent talk about his intentional decisions that were marked with opposition by those who represented the order of things, as it were. Top of his class, a graduate of Harvard Medical School, postdoctoral fellow at Johns Hopkins University. All of his professors said he showed tremendous promise. And when he told them that he wanted to devote his life to care and research and help the homeless, they told him he was wasting his time and his talent. The good news is that some people are captured by the enduring, protracted vision of God, by the dream of God for a mended world, for those who are on the edges and those who are on the margins. And we have seen that they, so-called they, are not so far from us. For in recent months, if we needed to be reminded, we see the tremendous interwoven connection that all of us share. The decisions of a few can impact the entire global community. The hubris and the greed of the so-called masters of the universe on Wall Street have affected you and me. If that is true, even as it is true, that a certain Mr. Madoff has been able to bilk world and many investors, astute people of business and intelligent people, out of $50 billion. One person, one machination of some way of making more money is able to impact the wealth of the world. If that is true, then the good news must be that one baby in a manger has the capacity to impact and seduce a broad range of people and co-opt them into the agenda of God for transforming the world and bringing us together in a spiritual community that realizes that not only are we connected together, but we are to be for one another. Why does all this matter? It matters because this story that we found our lives on, that we animate our imaginations by, that catapults us into directions and trajectories of absolute blessing for ourselves and others. This story matters because of people like Betancourt. Did you hear her interview recently? Do you know who I'm referring to, Ingrid Betancourt? French Colombian national who was kidnapped for 6.5 years, June of this past year, was rescued. It has taken some time to adjust herself to freedom again. But in her most recent interview, she spoke at length about the experience, about what has happened within her. And one of the things that struck me as I listened to that interview was what she said about her captors. She said, you have to learn to forgive those. Forgive those who have captured, who kidnapped me. I forgive them. Mind you, she said, some are easier to forgive than others. And I also have chosen to forgive those who did nothing about my capture, but left me there to suffer. But the thing I struggle most with, she said, is forgiving myself. Why it matters? Why does this story matter? It matters because we see evidence. When our gaze is able to be stripped away and rescued from the mind-numbing pressure that we are all under, enough to see clearly evidence in everyday life of those who are choosing to live by a different narrative, those whose hearts have somehow been grasped by the desire of God that we be as individuals and communities and families and societies for each other. An announcement has been made that with this child, with this God made flesh, a new kingdom has been ushered in, a new empire with new narratives, new values, new meanings. And insofar as we give ourselves to those, we find again the baby being born. Whether or not people acknowledge or believe it, read the papers and the debate going on about should we have Christmas, it's a secular holiday, it's not a secular holiday, there should be no mention of Merry Christmas on public institutions or all that. Despite that, I liken it to this. Let me use this example. On Canada Day, you will find across this country people who dress in red and white, wave flags, and come out to celebrations. Perhaps none more numerous or excited than here in Ottawa itself, up on Parliament Hill, up and down the streets. And people get excited about that because it represents something not only of that day, but the significance of the country being celebrated. That this is a wonderful country. With all our warts, there are very good things about this country. There are some people who couldn't care less about that day. Some people who are down there just to make a buck. They're not thinking about the rights and freedoms of the country. They're not thinking perhaps about the significance of all those who have come together to form this country. They're thinking about something else. And yet, the same constitution and same charter of rights and freedoms pertains to them. And they benefit from it whether they acknowledge it or not. True? Similarly, and all shall live forevermore because of Christmas Day. I bring you great tidings, good news to you and all the world. Whether you or I acknowledge it or not, a new reign has dawned. We may not join in the festivity. We may not be seduced enough to follow in the way of Christ, but the benefits are still there. And they are grasping people by the heart and by their lives, by their faith and by their passions, who are turning to recognize that the empire and the way in which things are, the dog-eat-dog world, the manipulative ways in which we co-opt and oppress people, the war and the strife and the running after possessions and trying to secure ourselves and insulate ourselves from every form of suffering, that's finished. That's no good. It's illusion. And what really matters is the extent to which we demonstrate love and we draw close to the God whose life animates us and gives us hope and vision and purpose. When our lives are spent in the way of God, then we realize the truth of what this baby born in Bethlehem means. When we are willing, as Jesus said, to be blessed as those who are peacemakers, to those who have the capacity to mourn. Those who recognize their impoverishment. You see, when we are full of ourselves, there's very little room for God to maneuver and to do God's work in us. When we realize that we are as helpless as that baby was born to human parents who depended on them to change his diaper and feed him. When we recognize that in the face and in the presence of God, we are powerless. Then God has the capacity and the invitation to maneuver in our lives in ways that will bring our truest selves to the fore and our most deepest calling and mission to our focus. Why does all this matter? It matters because God's love is persistently and unbiddenly given to you and to me, whether we acknowledge it or not. That God's mercy and God's desire for the blessing and the transformation of this world is incessant and persistent and will find men and women, boys and girls from everywhere in the world who will decide to subscribe to this agenda. God invites us home. Home so our lives begin to be opened up in spiritual fervor and in rootedness to what we are made for. That is why this God has come to pitch his tent with us. Where we move, God moves. We move away from God. It's an illusion because you can't get away from God. Read Psalm 139. Wherever I go, there you are. But God's tent is transportable. God's disposition is vulnerable. God's hope is enduring and eternal. And God's change is constant. That's why I think it matters. It matters to you and to me and to the world. It matters to the child soldier. It matters to those who are forced into prostitution. It matters to those under the grips of depression. It matters to those who are languishing away in prisons because of their stance for justice. It matters. Christmas comes. And no Herod, no Caesar, no Madoff, no masters of the universe on Wall Street can stop it from coming. For there will always be a community of those who decide that they will give their lives to the higher agenda of transforming this world, of living unselfishly and letting the love of God animate their entire passion for life. Don't follow after small goals and cheap illusions. Let this Christ, this story that embraces everyone, capture your heart and your faith and your life. Be with people who are struggling to make sense of it every day. I don't have it all figured out, and this congregation doesn't, and no church does. However, We come together week after week to have a go at it again and to be intersected by God's Spirit. Bono, of U2 fame, speaking about the way in which we are connected, has said, distance does not decide who is your brother or sister and who is not. The church is going to have to become the conscience of the free market if it is going to have any meaning in the world and stop being its apologists. In his book, Everything Must Change, Brian McLaren talks about the contrast between those who subscribe to the agenda of God, made manifest and embodied in the life and testimony of Jesus, and those who are still trapped and struggling under the oppressive force of the empire of the Herods and the Babylons of this world, says this: don't get revenge when wronged, but seek reconciliation. This is God's agenda. This is what the baby come man Christ is trying to say to us. Don't repay violence with violence, but seek creative and transforming nonviolent alternatives. Don't focus on external conformity to moral codes, but on internal transformation of our spirits in relationship to God. Don't love insiders and hate or fear outsiders, but welcome outsiders into the new us and the new we, a new humanity that celebrates diversity in the context of love and justice for all. Don't have anxiety about money and security or pleasure at the center of your life, but trust yourself to the care of God and the humble, simple gifts of God's creation. Don't live for wealth, but for the living God who loves all people, including your enemies and mine. Don't hate your enemies or competitors, but love them and do to them not as they have done to you and not before they do it to you, but as you would have Christ do to them and you. It's a different way. It's God's way. It's the way initiated and embodied and brought to us again this Christmas by the baby come man, whose mission and goal is still to transform the world. One heart, one life, one community, one family, one neighborhood, one society, one country at a time. Won't you sign up? That's why it matters, this story, because of you and I who have the capacity to say yes to this program of transformation, to this God who relishes relationship with us.